the award-winning Your Financial Editor program on 930 WFMD, news from the worlds of business and finance, with Your Financial Editor, Chris Murray.
Welcome to another edition of the Your Financial Editor program right here on Free Talk Radio 930 WFMD at WFMD.com and as a podcast. Just go to Apple Podcasts and search Your Financial Editor and you'll find us there. This is Chris Murray, your host. Happy Easter weekend to everyone. I hope you're having a extra blessed weekend as we celebrate the Savior, and we have a good program planned for you. We're going to be talking about some of the top stories. We had deals this week. We had IPO this week. We had some economic data. And then we're going to spend a little bit of time on that pathetic latest bill, $1.2 trillion spending package that just continues to not only fuel our national debt, that's coming up on $35 trillion, but also inflation, because they haven't done anything with the spending. And we know that that spending is one of the main culprits behind inflation and what is just sinking so many people. It's just so sad. You know, we have conversations all the time about how expensive things are and you get less for your money. And, you know, you look at these packages that, as I mentioned last week, that they release at 2:30 in the morning, 1,012 pages, not even 24 hours to debate it, like thieves in the night, Republicans, Democrats, all of them alike, and just continue to burden this country with unimaginable levels of deficit spending, pet projects, waste. It's terrible. So anyway, we're going to talk about some of that so you know where your hard-earned money is going, right? Because it's your money. It's not government money. It's borrowed, and we have to pay it back, and that's what our taxes are going toward. And it's just we're not getting anything for it other than a raw deal. That's what we're getting as hardworking American taxpayers that you are. So obviously the big story this week was a tragic accident down in Baltimore at the Francis Scott Key Bridge. You know, that was just such a horrific thing. And we'll know more about it over time as they investigate. Hopefully we'll get to the bottom of it, the true reason that it occurred. A lot of different things being said already as far as propulsion malfunctioning. Perhaps there was dirty fuel, you know, just different things that we've seen. Thank God they got the Mayday call in. And the bridge workers were able, not the guys on the bridge who lost their lives, but the others, I guess it's the transportation authority, were able to, you know, stop traffic and save so many lives. But I just wanted to talk about that a little bit, because even though, of course, first and foremost is, as I said on the Morning News Express the day after this happened, was we pray for their souls and for their families who are left behind. And of course, we were praying for all the emergency workers as they continue to do very, you know, difficult work in trying to locate those bodies that haven't been found yet. For the, you know, we want to make sure that they're safe and successful in what they do. On the business side of it, it's pretty far reaching. And that's why I just wanted to share it with you a little bit today. You know, you look at the port features. It's the deepest harbor in Maryland's Chesapeake Bay, closer to the Midwest than any other East Coast ports, with 5 public and 12 private terminals. More than 40 ships remain inside Baltimore Port, including small cargo ships, tugboats, pleasure craft. That's what's still there that can't get out. As far as imports go, it's the busiest U.S. port for car shipments. And I don't know if you've ever seen that. I had the privilege of seeing this one time when I was down in Baltimore. One of those ship carriers came in loaded with cars, and they were bringing them off the ship. I don't know how many drivers they had, but it was just constant. And they just filled acres and acres and acres of a parking lot with these new cars. So they handled more than 750,000 vehicles last year at the port, according to the Maryland Port Administration. The port handles imports and exports for major automakers like Nissan, Toyota, General Motors, Volvo, Jaguar, Volkswagen, and also the luxury models like Lamborghini and the Bentleys. So it's also the largest U.S. port by volume for handling farm and construction machinery, as well as agricultural products. So I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of times when you're going on Route 70, you'll see these tractor trailers with big combines and choppers and tractors that are headed east, and they're going down to that port so that they can export that equipment. Then you, as far as the exports, also you have the Curtis Bay Piers Coal Terminal. It's around 3 miles from the highway, and during the first 9 months of last year alone, Baltimore was the second biggest port for U.S. coal exports, only behind Norfolk, Virginia. So Baltimore exported about 20.3 million tons of coal. That was up from 14.3 million in 2022. So amazing amount of energy goes out to help people that need, you know, the warmth and the energy that the coal is creating for their livelihood, to keep them, you know, safe and healthy, and whether it's cool or warm or whatever it may be. And then you look at the cruise ships. It's also a cruise terminal. So you've got Norwegian, you've got Carnival, Royal Caribbean, all using that port. So in 2023, they said that cruises carrying more than 444,000 passengers departed from the port. I mean, this is just a major juggernaut as far as, you know, when you're talking about things on the water and import, export, and pleasure, you name it. So we heard pretty much right away that General Motors and Ford were going to reroute their affected shipments after the bridge collapsed and it shuttered the Port of Baltimore. So, you know, everybody's trying to figure out from a business standpoint and to keep jobs going, to keep people working, to keep families fed, you know, what's the best way to do that? And you just have to say, honestly, you hope you have honest and intelligent people involved, right? That this doesn't become political. We already saw a little bit of that earlier this week. Biden says that the government, the federal government, again, that's you, right? Because they don't have any of their own money, was going to pay for the entire rebuild. And then Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, like she always does, or anybody in the administration, has to walk back somebody else's foolish comments and say, no, we, you know, probably didn't really mean that. So here's the problem, like I said, as far as the honesty and the integrity, is it's nothing. I wouldn't be surprised in a nanosecond if Congress and Biden don't try to use this as some type of spending package or supplemental, and then all of the garbage gets thrown into it, because you know it's not going to be a standalone. You know, again, they're thieves in the night, and they know that that never works, so they have to hide it. They have to drop it, as I mentioned a moment ago, at 2:30 in the morning and all that. So hopefully that's not going to happen, but, you know, we're going to keep an eye on it for sure. You know, something else that's been going on that's really, you know, tragic and potentially deadly is all the stuff at Boeing. And they've had a really tough time the last handful of years. And the Boeing CEO, David Calhoun, finally announced this week that he's stepping down at the end of 2022. So Calhoun was just tapped back in 2020 to lead Boeing through what they call the year to complete the critical work underway to stabilize and position the company for the future. That was back, you know, in 2020. So things have not gone well. Boeing announced an overhaul of its management team this week. It's trying to turn around the company's reputation. So besides David Calhoun, you've got the Boeing commercial airplanes chief. He's going to step down effective immediately. You've got the independent board chair, a guy named Larry Kellner. He announced his plans to resign. Boeing already replaced the head of their 737 MAX program. So this is just a shame. You know, like I said, Boeing brought in Calhoun to help after the deadly crashes involving their 737 MAX 8 planes in 2018 and 2019. So here's the other thing. You have to ask about the quality of the employees or else you're not being honest, right? And I've talked about this, whether you're talking about airplane mechanics, builders, pilots, or if you're talking about doctors and surgeons or people in media, whatever it is, nowadays, because of the backwards thinking, the upside down world that we're living in, what is the quality of the person? Did they get the job just so somebody could check a box? And then, of course, everyone, if that doesn't go right, which so often it doesn't, and we see this, then the general public suffers from it. So was DEI involved here? Diversity, equity, inclusion for hiring, which is just ridiculous. It's stupid. It's race baiting. It's dividing. Or are these people putting these planes together really qualified and good workers? Look, that door that blew off that plane, it's 16,000 feet or whatever it was missing four bolts. Who misses four bolts on a door for an airplane? Number one, the person didn't put them on. Number two, whoever's in charge of quality control, they're not doing their jobs on inspections. So is this just because somebody could check a box, right? Show your weakness because you don't hire the right person. You hire the person because, you know, you want to be popular or you want to get invited to parties or hang out with certain people. So, again, mechanics, pilots, the builders of the plane, I don't care who you are, inspectors, you better be qualified for the job. And here's just something to let you know. The current CEO of United Airlines recently said that he's going to hire more pilots based on DEI. So think about that next time you get on a plane. By the way, this guy's a cross-dresser. So apparently he's been to drag shows, and these are the kind of people that, you know, obviously he shouldn't be a CEO. He shouldn't be where he is. But think about that. It's impacting your safety and your livelihood, and it's extremely unfair. And it's just, like I said, it's backwards. There's other words I want to use, but I know I can't because I'll get fined by the FCC. But these things need to be talked about out in the open so that they have to answer for it. And, you know, of course, when you bring it up, they'll stutter and they'll make excuses. More importantly, and unfortunately, they lie to your face. But that's where we have to put them, in that position. Big IPO this week. Shares of Donald Trump's Trump Media and Technology Group went public at the beginning of the week. And they surged as much as 59% in their debut on Tuesday. So, you know, the market capitalization at one point crossed the $10 billion number. And it was a very, very big success. The next day, there was even more appetite for the new stock. It valued, when they closed on Tuesday, it was up 16% at $57.99 a share, valued the company at almost $8 billion. President Trump's majority stake is valued at about $6 billion. So what this allows is the company, True Social, they basically raised $300 million in cash in the IPO to build out True Social platform more and more and more. And it seems like the couple years that it's been in place, it's done very well. Devin Nunes runs it, you know, used to be a congressman, looks like he's doing well as a CEO. Well, I would imagine he has to be because Trump would fire him, right? That's one thing he doesn't put up with is poor performance, poor effort, poor energy, that kind of thing. So it looks like Nunes is doing well, and we'll have to see if that continues and if they're able to add to their user base, things like that. Also, we saw a deal this week with one of the big box stores, and that was Home Depot. They announced that they were buying the building material supplier, SRS Distribution, at an $18.25 billion deal. So that's the biggest deal that acquisition that Home Depot's ever been involved in. And they basically said, just like Lowe's did, that a lot of their do-it-yourself type people, that's waning. So they wanted to go more to the professional contractor, and they really believe that SRS Distribution is going to help with that, whether it's in roofing or landscaping or whatever it may be, that'll be a conduit that'll help them. And why is a do-it-yourselfer falling off? People don't have the discretionary money they had a few years ago, right? Because of inflation and all the other nonsense, people are postponing, a lot of those projects. So Home Depot decided that they would go after the professional contractor and actually, add to that side of their business. And we'll see how it works out. I mean, $18.25 billion, that's a big pile of money. So hopefully they get the synergy, everything works together, and it improves the company, i.e. the shareholder. And then, of course, the people that choose to shop in Home Depot. Also, we saw this week, and this was really a shame, but Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen admitted that Biden doesn't have a plan, only principles, when it comes to preventing Social Security from going insolvent less than a decade from now. So Yellen was before the Senate Finance Committee, recently. She was in a hearing with them, and she was talking about Biden's bloated 2025 budget. And, government projections last year estimated that Social Security would run out of money as soon as 2033, right? So that's right around the corner. And in this bloated budget that Biden put forward, $4.9 trillion in new taxes are proposed. And fortunately, one of the senators, Cassidy from Louisiana, told Yellen that of that $4.9 trillion of new taxes, none of that has been dedicated to Social Security. And Yellen, she's so terrible at her job, always has been. She says that Biden wants to work with Congress to find a way to protect Social Security and extend its solvency beyond 2034. Well, thank you. We could have had a second grader read that. That is just political past the ball, right? Hot potato. So Cassidy went on to say that he and the Senate Finance Committee have not heard one peep from Biden on solving the funding issue for Social Security, outside of the rhetoric that he was yelling during his State of the Union address. So, no plan to fix Social Security. And again, I don't care if you have an R or D or an I after your name, but when you look at these things and you're told every single year by the trustees of Social Security and Medicare, et cetera, that they're going to become insolvent, you've got to fix the problem. I mean, if this happens in 2033, you're talking about 66 million people that are going to have, the projections are, a benefit reduction of 23 to 25%. That's just out of the gate. So instead of focusing on important things for Americans, they're focused on spending all this waste, you know, giving hundreds of billions of dollars to Ukraine. And you just watch that debtclock.org. Go to that website. Watch that debt just ratchet up every millisecond. And they act like Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid, all these programs, that it's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. Everything's going to be fine. That's a blatant lie. It takes strong people in politics to address these issues. Very, very strong people. And you see it's non-existent, you know, to stand up against Pelosi and Schumer spending, the wasteful spending, the pet projects, the paybacks, the money laundering. You see it with Michael Johnson, right? The speaker says he has a biblical view of the world. And I'm sure he's a good guy. You know, he seems like, I read up on him when he first got elected as speaker, but he doesn't have the backbone. You know, these guys are getting their butts kicked every single negotiation that they go into. Who cares if they had shut the government down last weekend? Who cares? It just goes to show how unnecessary most of the government is. Maybe that's why they don't want to do it. So, but yeah, the spending continues, and that throws gas on the fire for inflation. And we all know that story because we're living it, right? Unless you're, you know, some elitist or ultra wealthy or an oligarch or whatever it might be. You know, it was nice to see this week or last week that Mark Zuckerberg, on the anniversary of founding Facebook, bought himself a $300 million yacht. And I don't say that out of envy. I could care less. But these are the people that don't care about you at all and just want to suck you in. So you use Facebook, you use Instagram, you watch YouTube, you use Google as a search engine instead of DuckDuckGo or something better. You know, they hate you. They use you. And the only way, you know, that they're going to feel any pain is through dollar signs, because that's all they understand. So got off topic a little bit there, but, you know, the bottom line is, like I said, you've got Social Security and all these other programs. They need to be fixed. They need to be saved. We don't need to be handing illegal immigrants phones and debit cards or whatever they are, and free meals and free lodging and free health care and free education. They got to go. There's no way this country survives with this kind of stuff going on. Not even getting into the national security, which is, I would say, only second when it comes to the border because of the raping and the sex trafficking, the child trafficking, all of that. We want to protect people. And then second, of course, is protecting all of us on the interior from the terrorists that are already in our country because of Mayorkas and Biden and all the lackeys under that umbrella. And, you know, we talked last week about BlackRock, how the state of Texas had withdrawn $8.5 billion from BlackRock because of, you know, Larry Fink and BlackRock in general, along with all these other big companies are all about the climate. Again, this is the elitist thing. This is all about, like we talked with my guest last weekend, about control, power, money. That's it. Because climate stuff is a joke when you start looking at it. That's why we pointed it out last weekend on the program. But this week we saw the state of Mississippi has issued a cease and desist order to BlackRock, alleging the firm has committed fraud by misleading investors through its climate policies. So the Mississippi Secretary of State delivered the order and a notice of intent to impose an administrative penalty, which could amount to a first-of-its-kind multi-million-dollar fine against BlackRock, and this is an action that's targeting their so-called environmental, social, and governance ESG investing. So the Secretary of State claims that BlackRock has repeatedly misled Mississippi investors pertaining to its broader ESG agenda. And he's spot on. You know, I mean, BlackRock is a signatory of the Net Zero Asset Managers Initiative, which was founded back in 2020 to support the asset management industry to commit to a goal of net zero emissions. That's never going to happen. So we'll see. Now, BlackRock and Larry Fink and all these others, State Street and others, they're starting to seep back into the shadows, right? They're taking ESG off the end of their mutual funds or their ETFs or whatever they're peddling. Because the lights come on. Cockroaches are scrambling. Guess what? Nothing's going to change. They're going to keep doing it in the dark, just like they were before they put ESG behind their name and now having to take it off or say, you know, we're not going to be part of the Paris climate agenda and all that, accord, whatever it is, all that stuff. They're going to keep doing all that. They're going to keep flying their jets. They're going to keep sailing their yachts. They're going to keep driving whatever vehicle they want and not care at all about their so-called carbon footprint. But they're going to tell you exactly what you need to do, and they're going to invest your money in the things that are going to make them more money, get them more power, and get them more control. So a little bit of justice was done this week. We saw that the founder of FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, was sentenced to 25 years in prison by Judge Lewis Kaplan. That happened on Thursday. So he's really getting off easy, 25 years, because prosecutors wanted 40 to 50 year sentence for the disgraced crypto king, right? Now, Bankman-Fried's defense team is going to appeal the conviction and sentencing, so we'll have to see how that dog and pony show goes. You don't know these days with these judges who just, you know, they rule at their will, not based on the law or statutes. So we'll see how this works out. But I love what this judge said. Judge Kaplan said that Bankman-Fried had shown no remorse. Kaplan said he knew it was wrong before handing down the sentence. He said he knew it was criminal. He regrets that he made a very bad bet about the likelihood of getting caught, but he is not going to admit a thing. So I think the judge really has his number. I mean, this is a guy who fleeced customers out of $8 billion. So it's just a Ponzi scheme. You kind of, you know, compare it to the collapse of Enron, right? So he did a lot of damage to a lot of people. Thought he was, you know, something special because, you know, he was paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to political campaigns so he could get his picture taken. 99% of those donations were Democrats, by the way. So, you know, who wants their picture taken with Maxine Waters? Well, he did, apparently. But anyway, he's going to go to the Gray Bar Hotel. We'll see, like I said, with the appeal, how that works out for him. But, yeah, he's going to, no matter what, he's going to be doing a stretch. And I hope it's a nice long one and hopefully a maximum security prison. Back in a minute.
It's your financial editor with Chris Murray on 930 WFMD.
Welcome Welcome back. This is Chris Murray, your financial editor on Free Talk Radio 930 WFMD at WFMD.com. And as a podcast, just go to Apple Podcasts and you can grab it there. And mentioning earlier, we got some economic data this week that I thought was, you know, it was important to talk about a little bit, spend a little bit of time before we get to this ridiculous spending package that was released a couple Fridays ago. But we saw that the consumer confidence dropped just a little bit in March. So the Conference Board said that their consumer confidence index dipped to 104.7 this month from 104.8 in February. That's not much of a move, but that 104.7 is pretty far from the 107 that economists that were polled by Reuters had forecast. So when you look at that, that was even more disappointing. It seemed, according to the Conference Board, their chief economist, Dana Peterson, was saying that recession fears continue to trend downward, but consumers express more concern about the U.S. political environment compared to prior months. Not a big surprise there, because we're getting closer to the election. Things are getting jacked up, I think, and it's going to continue right into November. And then the other thing was, we saw consumers' inflation expectations unfortunately ticked up a little bit in March from where it was in February. And that's the last thing we need. And by the way, back to the terrible FSK bridge collapse. You've got to wonder what that's going to do as far as inflation. Rerouting, you're talking about using more diesel fuel with trucking, longer routes, things of that nature. So we'll see how that plays out. I'd love to say that I think leadership is going to help, but I don't. I don't think that at all. I mean, the last time we had a port issue was during the virus, and Pete Buttigieg is, I can't even say this with a straight face, is taking maternity leave and MIA. So, you get these people, it goes to show, who would think that the Department of Transportation, that cabinet position would be a big deal, right? Well, something like this happens, it is a big deal. When Katrina happened, the guy running FEMA, that was a big deal, right? These positions are extremely important, and you need leadership, and you need people that have knowledge and people that can make good business type decisions, because that's what it's coming down to as far as who's going to design the rebuild, who's going to be involved, how's the bidding going to go, is it going to be honest, you know, all those types of things. Also, we saw that, so that's why I think that inflation could, even though it's already remaining sticky, as they say, could get worse. We saw that mortgage demand dropped last week. Mortgage rates went up a little bit, so you saw loan application, that volume decreased 0.7%, according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. Refinancing dropped by 2%. During the same time, and was down 9% from a year ago. So you continue to see people that, I'll say it again, they're dealing with inflation, they're dealing with high interest rates, they're dealing with higher home prices, and sometimes that's just a really nasty recipe for the buyer, not for the seller, but for the buyer in particular. When we saw, you know, every Wednesday we get energy information from actually the Energy Information Administration. They release inventory data, and we saw it was mixed this week. I don't always talk about it. I follow it every week, but I don't always talk about it. But, you know, it was mixed. We saw that crude oil stocks, actually we saw a build of 3.2 million barrels, still 2% below the five-year average for this time of year, but we'll take it because it was a build, and it was a greater number than what analysts were looking for. Gasoline inventories rose for the first time in 8 weeks. That's good going into the driving season. And then distillate fuel stocks, they actually fell. There was a drawdown there. So your diesel fuels, for example, there was a drawdown there of 1.2 million barrels against an expected 100,000 barrel build. So you still have that issue. And I'd mentioned, you know, I always say, if you have something, a trucker brought it to you. So it comes over you know, with the sea crate carrier or sea container carrier. But then you think about, what did I see last time? I want to say 66,000 gallons of diesel fuel for those ships. And then it gets loaded onto the trucks, the tractor trailers, take it where it needs to be. So you're talking about diesel there. So, you know, this is, it's going to be interesting, as I mentioned, to see how this big port accident and closure, disruption, whatever you want to call it, impacts energy and inflation. And then we also saw that the fourth quarter GDP reading, its final revision, showed that GDP was up 3.4% on an annualized basis in the fourth quarter. That was better than the 3.2%. So that's the good headline news. The bad headline that they're not going to print is how much government, i.e. taxpayer spending, is going on through these spending packages and how that adds to GDP. But, you know, when you have GDP, gross domestic product, when you have growth in general, you want it to be organic. You don't want the government involved. That's the last thing you want. So, in all fairness, that number, in my opinion, is nowhere near the way they portray it. Not like it was before this administration. Again, when you had a solid economy based on, you know, a serious and stable foundation of business being done and the government not being involved near as much as it is right now with these spending packages. And speaking of that, I had mentioned, you know, this $1.2 trillion spending package dropped at 2:30 in the morning, 112 pages long, and less than 24 hours to read it, debate it, and vote on it. Unfortunately, that's the way Washington works. Never believe what a politician says. See how they vote, because I've learned over the years that they'll vote a certain way, and literally an hour later, if they can get their face on TV, they'll tell you that they stand for just the opposite, for smaller government or less spending or traditional values or whatever. And their vote is just the opposite. So they're just lying straight to your face. So always look at how they vote. This unfortunately passed 286 to 134 over fiscal and moral conservatives' objections. And they're trying to make them the bad people. How do you let like this minority hijack your party? It's simple. They believe in the Constitution. They believe in natural marriage. They know that there are two biological sexes. I mean, why would you ask that question? And they're strong enough, some of them, not many, but some of them are strong enough to vote that way. They don't care that they're going to be called an extremist or whatever, however they're going to be labeled. They don't care. They're doing the right thing in their mind for the people that they represent. And you know what? If they get reelected, then there's the proof in the pudding, right? So, you know, you've got these guys that were against this bill, voted against it. But yeah, over 1,012 pages. It includes funding for the state, education, defense, labor, homeland security, which we have no homeland security right now. They're actually processing illegals in and letting them come in. So that's just the opposite of security. And health and human services, which the government's way too involved in healthcare. We learned that with the virus, right? So now you've got the government in cahoots with major pharmaceutical companies and the whole vaccine debacle. So, but yeah, this bill was passed. Speaker Johnson said that democracy is messy. He was on CNBC. I mean, it's messy when you don't defend the republic, right? The United States of America, a republic. You drop something at 2:30 in the morning. It's over 1,000 pages long. Less than 24 hours to debate and vote on it. And then you skip town for, what are they going for, 2 weeks or something? Another break? Another vacation? This is what they do. I thought Johnson was going to be different. I was wrong. I thought Gallagher was going to be different. He's stepping down now and doing the wrong thing. You know, I had a lot of respect for him. He's no different than any of Kevin McCarthy or any of the other fake Republicans. Buck, stepping down, go, leave, get out of Washington, right? The further away these guys get, the question is, will they? Or are they going to be like Kevin McCarthy and, you know, do the whole whatever he's doing? I don't even know if he's a lobbyist now or what he's doing. But, you know, I mean, it's all revenge. But I don't care that Kevin McCarthy got fired. Actually, I do care. I'm glad. Very, very glad. And I hope that if Johnson's not going to stand up, get rid of him. Bring on the next guy or girl. Somebody that's going to lead. And quit getting their butts kicked in these budget debates over bills. I mean, look, this is another $1.5 to $2 trillion deficit this year. Debtclock.org. Go to it. I know you, oh, it's not a big deal. We'll be all right. We'll figure it out. Go to it. Watch that clock every millisecond. Last time I checked, it was, you know, just under $34.6 trillion. We'll be, what, $35, $36 trillion at the end of the year? Borders wide open. People are getting raped, killed, shot, beat to death. So, and like I said, when you look at the stuff that's in the bill, it's just, it'll turn your stomach as far as the money. I'll give you a little bit of it, actually. I have it here. Senator Bennett, from a Democrat from Colorado, $845,000 of your money for Envision You, LGBTQ, whatever, advocacy. Senator Schatz, Democrat from Hawaii, $550,000, Hawaii Health and Harm Reduction Center, same thing, services and syringe exchange. Schumer, there's your classic loser, $1 million for Sage New York for gay advocacy. And it just goes on and on. Abortion, this is all your money. This is what they're doing with it and how they act like they're helping. But, of course, they're just hurting everybody in this country one way or the other, and whether they realize it or not. And just another example I'll give you is stuff that gets pushed through and, you know, bills that get passed and the subsidies and the handouts. We learned this week that Fisker, the car, the automaker, they were in talks with a big automaker for a potential deal. Those talks collapsed. They're cash strapped. They paused their electric vehicle production a week ago. They weren't even making them. Then later this week, after the deals collapsed, they start slashing the prices of their EV vehicles, just trying to move them and create some type of cash flow. And they're probably going to have to file for bankruptcy, right? Bankruptcy protection. This is Henrik Fisker's, or will be if they go bankrupt, his second bankruptcy. His previous attempt was Fisker Automotive. They filed for bankruptcy in 2013, despite getting $192 million in loans from the Department of Energy. The Department of Energy doesn't have any money. That's our money as taxpayers. How did we fare in that bankruptcy on that $192 million loan? Right? So they fail, and now this guy's at it again and headed for bankruptcy again. Like I said, Department of Energy doesn't have any money. This is just more of this garbage, you know, that, like I said, that occurs just like in the bill that was passed a couple Fridays ago. So this company, Fisker, had an $8.4 million payment for some notes that were due in 2026. They didn't pay it. They're using the grace period to try to stay out of bankruptcy, and their shares are down 90% this year. And let me ask you this. You know, I said that they cut the value, or excuse me, the price of their vehicles, but who wants to buy a vehicle when the company's going to be bankrupt? Like, what if you need a part? What if you need something to be fixed? You're not going to have any support. So it's a shame, but we're going to keep talking about it. We're going to keep bringing the truth to you like we do every week here on the Your Financial Editor program, and also on the Morning News Express with Bob Miller and Chris Williams when we have our business updates at 5:50, 6:50, 7:50 each weekday morning. Those are live calls, and they are a lot of fun. I enjoy talking to those guys and letting everybody know what's going on in the world of business and finance. Have a blessed Easter. That's to you and your family and your friends. I know we're going to have a nice luncheon at our house tomorrow. So, like I said, blessed Easter. And we'll talk to you soon. This is Chris Murray wishing you and your family financial success.